Arm's Length Reporting, for investors who want the whole story. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
Everybody, time for the Corlin Economics Report. Opinions on political issues that are going on as we speak in the world today. We get over 100 comments typically. Our listeners' opinions on each one of the segments or each one of the daily editorials that we do during the week. We're going to start out the show. We're going to talk about a little bit about what's going on economically in America today. Jimmy, you're pretty up on this stuff. We talked about it before the show off mic. You're very, very skookum on it. Let's talk about it.
Yeah, so we had over, you know, this last week, just before the election, we had this dip in the year over year, or the, you know, inflation rate from a expected 8% to a 7.7%. And that lifted the markets for a period of time. It, you know, we saw a little bit of an increase there. We saw some good numbers come out of the markets.
It was very short-lived, though.
Exactly. And the reason why, when you dig a little deeper into the inflation numbers, you realize there's some real problems out there for the average American.
You bet.
So let's take a quick look at it. So when you get down to looking at those numbers, remember, from 8.2 from the previous month down to a 7.7, and you know, the anticipation was the Fed may relinquish some of its inflationary efforts by raising rates. We're already, you know, at some very serious highs from a long period of time. The decline in the inflation rate actually was driven mostly by, quote, necessities. Now, necessities include things like smartphones, which prices were down 22.9%. The televisions, which were down 16.5%. And entrance to sporting games events down 17.7%. So those are kind of, you know, when you say necessities, are they really necessities?
They're somewhat irrelevant, in my opinion.
But they really dropped the percentage rate down. But let's look at things that are really important, like, quote, staples. Food at work and school, 95.2% rise.
Wow.
Eggs, 43%. Butter, 33.6%. Car insurance, 12.9%. So when you look deeper, and these are from Bureau of Labor and Statistics, when you look deeper into this inflation reduction that came out from this last month, this last reporting period, it really isn't affecting our quality of life. It's just those, quote, necessities that have really dropped down, which is a really misnomer, I think, from just things that not needed, but things you
want. Smartphones and admission to sporting events, those are considered necessities?
That's in the statistics.
Not quite.
Yeah. So here you've got, according to Bureau of Labor and Statistics, a 12.4% increase for food year over year. Shelter up 6.9%. Energy at 7.6%, and heating oil year over year 68.5%.
Just wait until the winter months. Boy, you're going to hear some complaining out of the colder parts of America.
You bet. And we haven't actually even seen the real effects of reduction in oil production and gas production.
Yeah.
Based on the policies that the current administration in the United States are putting out to reduce U.S. domestic production, we haven't even seen the full effect of those policies in conjunction with the shutdowns in Europe and the problems with the Ukrainian war. So basically, some of the other numbers that are just staggering right now, the 1 in 6 households are behind in their utilities bills right now. $25 billion in new debt in September. So credit card and home, you know, debt, homeowner debt, you know, new mortgages is down, but credit card numbers are way up. So you're getting a significant problem with debt as we're going into a reduction, a probable reduction in GDP growth that could be real disastrous for markets over time.
It definitely can.
Yeah, and then, you know, there's some other, you know, just out today were the housing numbers. 5.9% in September reduction in existing home sales. I'm sorry, 5.9%. And that's a year-over-year 28.4% decrease in existing home sales.
Well, that's obviously due to the mortgage rates coming down, which is a necessity to keep the housing market going. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, rents are up, shelters up, you know, all these different things are up that your quality of life depends on. But those external factors that, you know, you probably don't need to go out and get your brand new smartphone right now, the prices are dropping. Yeah. Maybe that's what you want to do. But the problem is for those, again, those people that are on the lowest margins, that are living day to day, paycheck to paycheck, month by month to month, they're having a very difficult time. And this is not going to get better for them. So,
No. Yeah.
And as long as we have this type of, you know, the fundamental driver being, you know, energy prices, for that hit transportation, distribution, development, actually production of petroleum-based products, we're going to see serious, serious problems over a period of time.
Well, I got to tell you, inflation is something that's eventually going to kill Mr. and Mrs. Average America. There's no question whatsoever about that. And I think you're going to see that inflation in the 24 election is going to have a major, major impact, particularly on the presidential race, Jim. I really do. What do you think?
No, I agree with you. I think that, you know, I think the quality of life and the challenges that this administration has somehow avoided with this midterm election and some, you know, crazy, crazy voting patterns.
Yeah.
We're going to see a very different potential outcome for the U.S. In 2024. Very interesting to see how that's going to spin, where it's going to go from here. But there's nothing that's being changed by this administration that's going to actually, in the short term, reduce some of these pressures on energy and costs, especially for food and basic, you know, staples.
Well, I got to tell you, the optimistic thing about what you just said, though, is, you know, the pendulum has a tendency in America, or any country for that matter, to swing both ways. And I think that if a new administration gets in 24, which I think it probably will, or looking at it another way, you know, to keep some of our Democratic listeners happy, if the administration gets a little more tight about making the economy work for the average person, the pendulum will swing back eventually, and I predict it's going to happen after 24.
Yeah, let's pray it does, because the United States is losing power absolutely rapidly. One big problem we have is the Democrats are going to pass another budget in their lame duck session right now. That's going to hurt us again for another year, I think.
Predictions, Jim, on that one. We got about a minute.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a very tough road for the Democratic Party after January, when the new House is seated. Very minimal numbers there of Republican domination, but enough to actually stifle the administration's plans.
Yeah.
And of course, it's going to be very close in the Senate. So we'll see what happens. But my guess is the Democrats right now are going to push through a budget. They're going to get that budget through as many payoffs as they possibly can. And then it's going to be an all-out fight for the next 2 years on in almost every aspect of what we're doing, including, you know, continuing to fund billions to Ukraine.
Yeah.
A lot of these questions got to change.
Real quick, Jimmy, do you think a new budget would have a tendency to perhaps go a little bit in the direction of solving the problem? We got to take a break, so I want you to keep that in mind, and let's answer that question at the beginning of the next segment. We're going to be discussing the FTX debacle and its major, major fallout. Stick around.
your weekly fix on finance and investing. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
I'm getting back to the question about the budget that I asked you during the last segment. Is a new budget going to help Mr. and Mrs. America, do you think?
Absolutely not. I don't think it will at all. I think that the Democratic Party has been very focused on political payoffs with financial earmarks and cutouts for their pet projects and for people that will continue to support them. I think it's spending way too much money. I think that we have to cut back on our spending in order to kind of get control of what's been going on. But most importantly, they're going to pass this in the, you know, this lame duck session that will continue to support their interests and put them in a better position politically, not economically, for 2024. So that's the problem. We're having a tough time recovering from what the damage that was done with the economic decisions for the lockdowns. And Republicans, unfortunately, have been cowards in not helping stop this process.
No, they really haven't. Jim, speaking of the Democrats and the Republicans, let's talk a little bit about the failure of the FTX exchange.
Right. So FTX, crypto exchange, touted by all the industry, by all the media, by CNBC, by Cramer, by you name it, everybody did profiles on this guy, Sam Bankman-Fried, who was a young, 20-something guy that turned this company in a few years, FTX, into, at the first of this year, over $30 billion in value. Now, it turns out over the last few weeks, and we started tracking this the other night as they were announcing their potential bankruptcy.
Yeah.
Binance is another crypto exchange that was trying to bail them out. But when they looked in the numbers, they looked at the balance sheets, they realized, oh my God, this thing can't be fixed. Well, then it turns out, as you're getting more information out there, that this was absolutely a scam from the beginning with incompetent people, but very closely connected to the Democratic Party. He was, Sam Bankman-Fried, the SBK, they call him, SBF, they call him.
Yeah.
He was donated $37 million in this last cycle, the 2022 midterms, for Democratic donors.
Yep.
And had
big
pledged
number,
over
big number
and pledged over $1 billion for the 2024 elections.
Yeah.
But it turns out that the entire thing was a Ponzi scheme, pulling in money. He was actually shifting money over to a separate company, this Alameda Investment, this hedge fund group that his girlfriend was running. His girlfriend, Caroline Ellison, a mathematician or whatever, but basically no knowledge, no idea how to run a company that was, pulling billions of dollars, feeding off this FTX investment.
Yeah.
And she was losing money. Her father is Glenn Ellison, who's an MIT professor, who's been an advisor to Democratic policymakers, and was a close friend of Gary Gensler, the SEC chairman. So these people are all embedded in the same, these are facts. This is not made up. This
yeah.
is not speculation. They're all in bed with this company that went to $32 billion that was being touted by all the media and all the social media and basically saying, hey, what a wonderful great for crypto. It's now beginning to collapse. It did. I mean, FTX has filed for bankruptcy. There are literally thousands of people that have lost money, but big investment companies, Sequoia Capital, people like Tom Brady, who had tens of millions of dollars invested. We don't even know how much anymore. People like the retirement fund from the Ontario Teachers Union had, I believe, $75 million invested in this company that's now lost. And there's nothing on the books as the guy that did the Enron bankruptcy is now reviewing the books. He's like, there's nothing here. We don't know where anything is. It's a disaster. It's crazy. However, he had poured millions of dollars into Democratic candidates and into this administration and into the different policymakers out there and influence directly the policymakers. And now the policymakers are saying, well, we've got to regulate crypto. They should have known before. So this is very interesting that how potentially this could have been a setup from the beginning in order to regulate crypto to take the ability for you and I to have our own cash
yeah.
and move towards a digital currency, which is the direction right now that the federal government's going.
There you go. Jim, we got about 3 minutes left. You wanted to make some comments about recent activities by the FBI.
Yeah, so here we got a regulatory agency and the director, the SEC, the Securities and Exchange Commission, Gary Gensler, one of the key regulators of our financial system, the key regulator of our financial system, being involved in this indirectly with connections. And all this went on. And then you have things like the FBI and the DOJ. And they, again, are being used for political ends. FTX donates millions to the Democratic candidates to different organizations in order to get votes out. And then you've got the FBI silencing or attacking people to make fraudulent accusations in order to justify their own political agenda. And this is yesterday was a hearing with Christopher Wray, the director of the FBI. You can look at, I would recommend every listener to watch some of that, some of the hearings, specifically Ron Johnson. And then look a little bit into what happened with him and Josh Hawley, some of the questions that Josh Hawley was answering, Senator from Missouri, and of course, Rand Paul. But this is what happened, what the FBI did to Ron Johnson. When he was chairman of the committee, Oversight Committee, he and Grassley were actually investigating Hunter Biden. So the Judiciary and the Oversight Committee, Senate, they were investigating Hunter Biden. And the FBI on August 6, 2020, brought in a special briefing to give them advice that the Russians may be providing disinformation. Then that same, they basically were shooting down the Hunter laptop story before they got it, even though the FBI had already had the Hunter Biden laptop for at least almost a year.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I don't want to get – it's complicated, but bottom line is the FBI was playing games with the media in order to undermine a Senate investigation. And Josh Hawley just slammed Christopher Wray over flying a jet to leave his last Oversight Committee hearing and for asking about whistleblower information. And I'll tell you, it's really, really important stuff for Americans to understand. And, of course, we don't know if we will because the media – and the information's being censored and silenced and influencing people and really undermining the future of our nation.
I guess the question is, when you say really undermining the future of our nation, to what extent, Jim?
So I know we only got a few seconds left
here. We got 10 seconds.
We're going to talk a little bit about the next segment about what TikTok and social media is doing right now. I think it's shaping people's minds. Algorithms are moving that in order for political power and not in the best interest of the American citizens.
Stick around. We're going to be right back.
To find out more about today's guests, visit us on the web at www.kereport.com. You're listening to the Corlin Economics Report. We'll be back in a moment. Providing unique reporting on markets and companies since 1990, this is the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey, welcome back to Top of the Hour News. We follow it every single week. Hey, I want to read you something about social media and the news that I read last night that I think is really interesting. I want to read this to you. It's a bit of an op-ed, and then Jimmy and I are going to elaborate on it. Here we go. Quote, "The rise of social media has also caused irreparable damage to the craft of reporting the news. The skill, integrity, and professionalism required to accurately report the happenings of this world are quickly becoming a lost craft. Opinion now dominates news. The quest for truth has been subordinated to personal agendas. The media is no longer satisfied with the humble professionalism of reporting the actual news and letting us decide for ourselves what it means. swept up in self-importance and celebrity. They now feel the need to tell us what to think about the news. Would news broadcasting have shifted further and further in this direction if social media had not entered our culture? I personally don't think so. Jimmy, what do you think?
I think that there's, you know, this interesting point starting with social media as a start point, but I actually think it goes a little bit before that with the competition, major competition for media and the internet.
Yeah.
When
I agree.
The costs of actually having an analytical team that gave, you know, valid information for any major news organization became very high, became very competitive, certainly with print news, but also with the network news organizations and even cable news organizations. Those costs became very high. And then it was chasing advertising dollars. And chasing advertising dollars meant clicks on information. And then with clicks on information, you got extreme ideas or things in order to get people to look at it, emotionally maneuvering people's opinions in order to, you know, get more revenue from the advertisers.
Sure.
And then now what we've got with social media, Al, which I think is incredibly damaging, is people making decisions and getting information or disseminating information based on a handful of characters on a tweet or on a Facebook post. And there is no balance. There is no review. There is very, you know, people are moving to their ideology and following people that make them feel happy on their side.
Sure.
And they're very unwilling to cross the border and take a look at the opposing views. But the people that are driving that are the advertisers, are the tech companies, are the social media companies, because they're using algorithms to shape your what you get.
Well, as usual, the almighty dollar is truly, truly charting the course for the future.
You know, it is.
Yeah, I know.
And what happens, so, you know, I'm going to give you a little bit of an insight, and maybe your listeners can understand this a little bit. All of our listeners can understand it. So, you know, being the deputy director of counterterrorism for U.S. Pacific Command and their Joint Intelligence Operations Center, and the contingencies senior analyst and the South Asia Pacific analyst, senior, you know, deputy chief, I spent a lot of time looking at different problems from the African coast all the way across to the U.S. West Coast, including China, Korea's, Indonesia, India. And what I saw happening, and it very much frustrated me as an intelligence organization, was when the commander of U.S. Pacific Command, now Indo-Pacific Command, started saying, hey, look, we've got to get tracking this social media, Twitter, for information. And it bothered me a lot because decision makers were then making decisions based on information. At the time, it seemed innocuous. Okay, well, let's use all the open source knowledge we can to get a good idea of what's happening. It would give you valuable information. But what happens is that overwhelms the news media, overwhelms the decision-making process. And when the decision-making process is overwhelmed by tweets and information, people can manipulate that. They can manipulate that through funding of information. So when you have large corporations and tech companies that want an agenda, they can manipulate senior government decision-makers, including warfighting leaders, with fraudulent information in order to shape an outcome that they want to achieve for their broader interests.
And I would guess personally, Jim, that 9 times out of 10, the information that very, very important decisions are based on is oftentimes simply somebody's opinion.
Correct. And it's instantaneous. So as we've seen numerous times, at almost every time, the first reporting is always false. As an intelligence guy, we know that. You know, we've learned that. The problem is Leaders respond to it. Politicians respond to that first response, and then they immediately feel obligated to make a comment. Their comment can be 180 degrees off because the first responses are inaccurate. And then it's protecting themselves using whatever means necessary to not embarrass themselves because what they said the first time was wrong. And I think, you know, what we're going to, you know, what we talked about earlier in the show with FTX is a perfect example of that, where a lot of people get trapped by their involvement, but then their whole goal is to cover up the mistakes they've made rather than correct the mistakes.
Yep.
And that's what's happening with information right now. It's just absolutely, you know, destroying people's basic fundamental knowledge and actually their ability to think and process because of these quick, you know, algorithm driven social media posts that that are really designed to grab your emotions and to shift you one way or another.
They're designed to grab your emotions and shift you one way or another, and also to click in the appropriate spot so that the originator can get more revenue.
Absolutely. That's the whole idea with it. And, you know, we have even a bigger problem than, you know, this is Western ideas, you know, really the most of these innovations came from Silicon Valley tech companies, U.S. tech companies, you know, Facebook, Twitter, all these, you know, different ideas that were thought to be expanding the knowledge of all people. But what happens and what has happened is those big Google, Apple, big corporate tech entities, Facebook, Amazon, they're beginning to use this for their financial benefit. But then let's go one step farther. Let's go to TikTok. TikTok is designed by a Chinese company that is controlled by a Chinese company.
And owned by a Chinese company.
Exactly. And supposed to have some firewalls between here and US, but basically you've got an authoritarian entity that controls one of the most influential platforms for youth in America right now in order to shape their minds to achieve their political ends, not their financial and political ends, not just money, but in order to shape American youth in order to accept in a completely different view of the world than what Western ideology is based on, what our Constitution is based on.
Well, I know a lot of friends of mine were dependent on information from TikTok where to cast their votes in the last election, because many of my, for lack of better terms, liberal friends told me that's what they were doing, and they thought I was crazy because I didn't use TikTok.
It's just insane to me.
It is.
But it made a big difference in this election, especially for young females who voted against abortion.
Exactly. Jimmy, we got to take a real quick commercial break here. Ladies and gentlemen, we're going to be right back to wrap up KER Politics. Stick around. Hey, welcome back here to wrap up KER Politics. Got an incredibly important, I didn't say incredibly, I meant an incredibly important topic to discuss here with Jim. Yeah, it's called The Economic Disaster of the Pandemic Response. That's a front page article that appeared in Imprimis Magazine, or Imprimis Newsletter, I should say, which I read every time I get it. It's by a guy named Jeffrey A. Tucker. He's a founder and president of the Brownstone Institute and a daily columnist on Econ for the Epoch Times. He served as the editorial director of the American Institute for Economic Research. He's written for several publications, including the Wall Street Journal, the National Review, the Freeman, and Chronicles. He's the author of 20 books, including Liberty or Lockdown. So this guy is no newcomer to the concept of lockdowns. You know, he wraps up this article, which we're going to talk about, by saying one thing, which I think a lot of people have forgotten about. specifically the folks in the Biden administration. Quote, economics is about people making choices and institutions enabling them to thrive. Public health is about the same thing. Driving a wedge between the two, as happened in 2020, ranks among the most catastrophic public policy decisions of our lifetimes. You know, I think you're going to see, you all know, I mean, you're all pretty skookum when it comes to the financial condition of the United States. I don't think anyone would argue with what I just read by Mr. Tucker. I have to say that we've been talking about the economic disaster of the pandemic response for quite some time. We are focusing on it to wrap up this particular program with this article because Mr. Tucker clearly defines very succinctly what exactly happened. I mean, the stock market really hasn't come back with any what I would call fervor. Amazon continues to lay off. The economic conditions in the United States are really, really bad. Here's an interesting way that Tucker started the article. He said, in April 2020, a full month after President Trump's fateful news conference that green-lighted lockdowns be enacted by the states for 15 days to flatten the curve, the president had a revealing White House conversation with the famous Anthony Fauci. That was a little bit of an improv for me. Fauci at the time was the head of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases. Trump asked him what he thought, and Fauci looked him straight in the eye and said, I'm a doctor. I'm not an economist. I have no opinion on the economic fallout. Boy, it's a shame that he didn't, wasn't it, Jim?
Yeah, and I think you kind of skipped over Trump's comment that, according to Jared Kushner in his book, and yeah. Trump's comment was, in this discussion, I'm not going to preside over the funeral of the greatest country in the world,
right?
Trump wisely said. And of course, he was incredibly frustrated at what was happening. And you had an entire administrative apparatus of the National Institute of Health, the CDC, NIAID, of course, that was represented by Fauci and, of course, Deborah Birx, all pushing the lockdown agenda with no historical or scientific evidence to show that that would actually help against this virus.
And you know why there wasn't any evidence? Because nobody had ever tried a lockdown before, which is something that the author of this article brings out. We have had some terrible epidemics and pandemics since, what is, I guess it started in about 2018, and nobody ever suggested a lockdown. They had too much smarts then.
Yeah, this article is very good. He actually lays out, a series, even the 1916, 1918, the Spanish flu.
Yeah.
They didn't lock down, with the exception of a few places, and that actually grew a big pushback. And one of those key places was San Francisco that tried it.
Yeah.
But people pushed back then. And what I think his entire theme with this is the economic impact was catastrophic.
Yeah.
The public policy that was driven by unelected officials, medical officials, did not account for the overall impact of health and society. And that's what he's arguing was absolutely a fatal, damaging mistake.
You know, it's interesting. He goes on and he says, economics is about people making choices. People couldn't make any choices in terms of the pandemic lockdowns. Not only did it really devastate the business community in the United States, but I would maintain, Jim, that it devastated the social structure of the United States. Do you agree?
Yeah, I do. I think so. And I think, look, what happened the summer of 2020 after the lockdowns and the massive riots over the George Floyd incident.
Yeah.
Had a lot to do with people's tension and frustration of being locked in and being held, basically hostage by government authorities. Now, if you remember the initial lockdown, it was supposed to be, done by Easter, 15 days.
Yeah.
And then it was extended. And of course, you know, who was in charge, and I'll go right back to this. The task force lead was Mike Pence. Mike Pence was listening to all these insiders in Washington, all the bureaucrats that were making recommendations and not taking in consideration what the major impacts were. And there was a lot of information that was out there that this was mostly dangerous for the elderly and people that had multiple comorbidities. Mm-hmm. That was known then. As it faded, then you have the as people started to come out of it a little bit, when we actually lifted some of the lockdowns, a lot of the blue states kept them in. But if that summer, remember, people were saying, keep your mask on, but it's okay. You won't be hurt if you're in a protest with thousands of people or hundreds of thousands of people and burning things down. It won't hurt you. People forget what happened. They forget about the lies that were told. They forget about the potential political reasons that this happened. And that's what I think is more damaging than anything else, because half the country doesn't trust the other half. It doesn't matter which side you're on. You don't trust the other half.
Right.
It's directly related to this lockdown and basically the manipulation of the virus for political ends.
Yeah. You know, Wallace Tucker says, and I think this particular statement really talks about, it really proves the gravity of this whole situation. Tucker says, quote, "We will be suffering the results for years, yet even today, few people grasp the relationship between our current economic hardships, extending even to the growing international tensions and the breakdown of trade and travel and the brutality of the pandemic response." Jimmy, you've had interesting opinions on the COVID pandemic over the years. Just talk about some of the highlights, would you?
Well, I suppose, you know, first of all, I was against the masking. There was ample scientific evidence that it would not stop a 125 nanometer virus. I was very much against the lockdowns because it was impacting everyone. And of course, you know, we started an organization in Washington that kind of pushed back as much as we possibly could. What I was very much against was unelected health officials making these determinations based on pressures from political entities. And absolutely, the worst thing about this was the media and then the government eventually, certainly under the Biden administration, getting involved with manipulating and propaganda to push an agenda that kept them in power and kept people afraid when there was absolutely no justification. We know now there's no justification, but I do know that many people are still absolutely terrified of this virus. And even with my own family and my own, you know, and the hypocrisy is stunning of what's happening out there right now. It's crazy. And it continues because of exactly the government's propaganda through the National Institute of Health, through Health and Human Services and the CDC.
Yeah. Well, let me wrap this up by saying shutting down economic life was a singularly bad idea for taking care of the pandemic. That's been proven over and over and over. I like the way that Jim McKinney and his family responded to the pandemic. And you notice Jim is an older fellow, not nearly old enough to be in the high-risk category, but he never got sick. He got sick, but not really seriously. Ladies and gentlemen, it's been fun putting the show together.
The Corlin Economics Report is produced for A.B. Corlin and Associates. Opinions expressed on this program are intended solely for the entertainment of our listeners, do not constitute investment advice, and are not necessarily those of this network, radio station, or our sponsors. Find out more about this program and today's guests by visiting www.kereport.com. For Al Corlin, this is Colleen Robbins. Join us again next week for the Corlin Economics Report.